This is Backseat Box Office, episode number 268, for the weekend of August 12th through August 14th. Hey, this is Jeff.
And this is Art.
And you are listening to Backseat Box Office, and in the reverse order, we are the Backseat Producers. Yes, this is Backseat Box Office, where we talk about the box office results last weekend, what's coming out, and what we've been watching, and other details of our lives. Something like that. So, in a very meandering way, Art, how's it going?
It is going well. Well as can be expected. We've had a string of 100-degree days down here in Texas, and I literally cannot drink water fast enough.
Yeah, that's not fun.
Yeah, it's a balancing act.
It's not fun. So I'll be thankful that I am not living where you are, because with my allergies... Audience, you can probably hear how it's affecting me. I would not be a happy camper right now if I had this congestion and 100-degree weather. But soon it'll get better, Art. It'll get better.
I don't think the allergens are as bad down here.
Yeah.
Like, my allergies bother me way less down here in Texas than they ever did up north in Illinois. Illinois was very green. And
do you get wind? I know it's hard to really compare to Chicago. Or to Illinois, but do you get anywhere close to the wind that you did at your old place?
No.
No. Interesting.
No, it's less wind, it's less rain, it's more heat, but it's less cold and less snow and less ice. Right. So it's a trade I'm willing to take for now.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's talk about something else that is, I guess you could say, is hot. And that will be the box office for last weekend. So this is for the weekend of August 5th through August 7th. Here's your top five. Finally, we have Suicide Squad in the theater. That came in at number one, and it pulled down $133.7 million, rounded up, coming in at 4,255 theaters. At number two, we have holdover Jason Bourne, which came in at $22.4 million. At number three, we have Bad Moms. That came in at $14.0 million. Number four, we have The Secret Life of Pets. Came in at $11.5 million. And at number five, we also have another holdover, Star Trek Beyond. Came in at $10.0 million. And there's your top five. And thankfully, I don't know, thankfully, the Cat movie that had Kevin Spacey, Nine Lives, 6.2, almost 6.3, but 6.249915 million dollars.
Yeah, I was gonna mention that if you didn't, because we did actually talk about that a few weeks back.
Okay.
And I just as a trailer that I saw that just completely blew my mind that it was a thing. Yeah, so that tanked pretty hard, and I like that they don't have any budget numbers on it.
I'm almost wondering, you know, you always hear about these two movies are in the same universe, like they're talking about G.I. Joe and Transformers being in the same universe.
Right.
That's not really Kevin Spacey. That's his actual character from House of Cards, and they have blackmail on him, and he has to, like, do that movie. So it's a movie within a movie.
Movie within a movie. Nice, nice.
Yeah, I don't. Just a wild idea. All right. Mm-hmm. So yes. What do you think about $133 million for Suicide Squad?
I think that's a great opener. I think that's really strong.
Not as high as Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
But still higher than Man of Steel.
Right. It's Batman versus Superman. This is a bunch of villains. So I think that's a really good showing, and it's not really a well-known thing, you know.
Well, no, I was just going to say, because you have a built-in audience for Superman for Man of Steel, and then the built-in audience for Superman, and probably some crossover with the Batman.
Right.
But you didn't have anyone from, like, Justice League in Suicide Squad.
Right.
So, yeah. Oh, there's plenty more to talk about Suicide Squad, but that will be in a later segment. All right, so that was last week's box office. So now let's get over to the new movies coming out this weekend. We have two, and Art's going to tell you about the first one.
Okay, the first one on our list is Pete's Dragon. It is rated 88% fresh on the tomato meter, 96% want to see it. A reimagining of Disney's cherished family film, Pete's Dragon, is the adventure of an orphan boy named Pete and his best friend Elliot, who just so happens to be a dragon. Pete's Dragon stars Bryce Dallas Howard, Jurassic World, Oaks Fagley, This Is Where I Leave You, Wes Bentley, The Hunger Games, Carl Urban, Star Trek, Una Lawrence. Rated PG for action, peril, and brief language. Genre animation, kids and family. Directed by David Lowry. Written by David Lowry, Toby Halbrooks, Malcolm Marmortstein. Runtime, 90 minutes. Okay.
Do you realize
also in the cast.
Do you realize you cut off about two-thirds of the description?
It did not load. Oh, my goodness. No, that is way more than two-thirds of the description. That is like three-fourths of the description. I thought that was a really weird cutoff. It was not loaded. It was butted right up to the thing, and there was no little more button. And
I mean, really, you got to some. You know, some of it is just okay. Here's all the people we got to work on this movie.
Yeah.
And they kind of slip back in. Okay, here's synopsis.
I see. Okay, so let's go. Let's keep running. Robert Redford, Captain America: Winter Soldier. Films directed by, we already said, written by, yeah. For years, old wood carver Mr. Meacham, Robert Redford, has delighted local children with his tales of the fierce dragon that resides deep in the woods of the Pacific Northwest. To his daughter, Grace, Bryce Dallas Howard, who works as a forest ranger, these stories are little more than tall tales, until she meets Pete, Oaks Fagley. Pete is a mysterious 10-year-old with no family and no home who claims to live in the woods with a giant green dragon named Elliot. And from Pete's descriptions, Elliot seems remarkably similar to the dragon from Mr. Meacham's stories. With the help of Natalie, Una Lawrence, an 11-year-old girl whose father, Jack, Wes Bentley, owns the local lumber mill, Grace sets out to determine where Pete came from, where he belongs, and the truth about this dragon. Disney's Pete's Dragon opens U.S. theaters, blah, 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 blah. So, yes, I think they then covered everybody else. What do we got? Yes. So I don't know. This looks somewhat interesting. We talked about it when I first saw the trailer a couple months back. I don't know.
I adored the original. I always have a soft spot in my heart for, you know, I think it's like a micro genre is a boy and his pet, or, you know, not to be sexist, or a girl and his pet and her pet,
right,
kind of thing. So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, considering I haven't seen Star Trek Beyond yet, and there are some other movies that I want to see first. I don't know if we'll see this in theater, but I'll definitely try to catch it.
Yeah, I liked Pete's Dragon, but I think I liked a lot of the other combination live action animated things that Disney put out better. Mary Poppins, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. What are some of the other ones?
See, the weird thing for me is that the first 20 seconds of this trailer, I thought, is there another Tarzan? You know how they released the same type of movie by two different studios at the same time?
Yeah.
Is this Tarzan? Oh, no, this is Pete's Dragon.
I could see that.
So, yeah, it's kind of a missed opportunity. You know, it's interesting, the story choice about putting him as, you know, a kid that's living in the wild.
Or right.
Almost a homeless kid.
Raised by wolves, sort of walks like a man.
Yeah. So, yeah, interesting. There is a lot of praise out of a lot of these. I mean, because usually sometimes you'll see a fresh review on Rotten Tomatoes, and sometimes there's a little bit of vitriol that's kind of hidden kind of thing. Like, case in point, Kirk Honeycutt from honeycuttshollywood.com. With Pete's Dragon, you sense a rare opportunity for a Disney classic slip through the filmmaker's fingers, which, you know, kind of on the borderline, that might be a run, but I guess he liked it. But Richard Lawson from Vanity Fair, a film of uncommon warmth, decency, and humanity. Frank Switek from One Guy's Opinion, it's not merely a throwback, but one that recaptures the endearing qualities with which the best of its models won over audiences. So, interesting descriptions about this movie.
It has potential.
Peter Hartlob of San Francisco Chronicle. There should be more American family movies like Pete's Dragon. Since there aren't, we should get behind this one. And then you have, I got to read a rotten one from Will Leach, or you know, I don't know, that's his name. The New Republic, who's a top critic. The movie feels like a rock coated in cotton candy, a shiny object that simulates human type emotions, but never really earns them. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this one. All right, so we talked about a family movie. Let's talk about a not-so-family-friendly movie. This movie is called Sausage Party. Currently 87% on the tomato meter. Out of 30 reviews, 26 fresh and 4 rotten. And out of 32,000 Rotten Tomatoes users, 95% want to see this movie. So here's the description. A misplaced sausage and his savory friends embark on an existential adventure through the aisles of a massive supermarket in this raunchy animated comedy from Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. Yes, raunchy animated comedy. As the store's annual 4th of July sale draws near, the perishable pals must return to their rightful places on the shelves before the customers come flooding in to fill their carts. Conrad Vernon, Monsters vs. Aliens, takes the helm for the Sony Pictures / Annapurna Pictures co-production pen. Well, just let you know, you'd figure in Sausage Party there would be a lot of pee. Anyways, Maya Rogan, Goldberg, Kyle Hunter, and Ariel Shafirwitz. Not even close. Okay, rating is R for strong, crude sexual content and, wait for it, art.
Oh.
Pervasive language and drug use.
I'm so out. I'm done. I am done.
Genre is the aforementioned animation comedy. It is written by Kyle Hunter, Ariel Shafir, Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and co-directors by Conrad Vernon and Greg Tiernan. Our voice cast, Seth Rogen, Kristen Wiig, Jonah Hill, Bill Hader, Michael Cera, James Franco as Druggy, Danny McBride as Honey Mustard, Craig Robinson as Grits. So I'll just say the cast of, this is the end. Paul Rudd as Darren, Nick Kroll as Douche, David Krumholtz as Lavash, Edward Norton as Sammy Bagel Jr., and Salma Hayek as Teresa Taco. So, yeah. Seen this one in the theater, Art?
No, I seriously doubt it. Because no. I don't even know where to go with that.
All right, so, yeah, this will probably be maybe a video. I don't know. So what do the reviewers think about this? Well, I'm going to start with Michael Ordonia from the San Francisco Chronicle. And this is not complicated at all. Mix A People's History of the United States with Caligula, a stoner comedy, and a slasher fic, and then animate the results, and you've got the essence of the thing. Now, usually I've been noticing that IndieWire, it seems like they don't like anything, but they did give a fresh review for Sausage Party, but the blurb doesn't really inspire you. Sausage Party, for better or worse, is a movie that actually exists. And at some point along the way, that fact will actually shock you.
How is that positive review?
I don't know.
Do you think he misclicked? Do you think?
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I think there must have been some karma account for these two guys. And they figured that they had to, you know, make a withdrawal. Because it just seems like that, you know, they've been doing pretty well. Let's see if we can get anything greenlit. And apparently, I mean, because it's...
That sounds about right.
Stopped about 5 minutes short from a sex toy story.
that's their next movie.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't want to, you know...
Keep that under wraps. Yeah, that under wraps. Right,
Literally and figuratively.
Send your treatment in.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. So I can hear the keys going right now. Okay. All right. So we will return to the middle from each end of the spectrum. And we will wrap up the or our look at the movies that are coming out this weekend. So now we are going to get to the segment we like to call Share Time, where Art and myself talk about what we've been watching. And since we didn't, there was no show last week, so this will cover the last 2 weeks. And we're going to start off with one more voicemail from Tad. Now, I realize that I played these out of order, but we have another voicemail from Tad telling us about his experience of going to Phoenix Comic Con and some very nice things to say about his experiences there. So, Tad, start us off.
Hey, guys. This is Tad calling in for Backseat Box Office. Just kind of, I guess it's for a What You've Been Watching episode or segment, but it's not what I've been watching. It's what I've been doing. I've spent the last 3 days at Phoenix Comic Con. I went Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. I'm on my way home from Saturday. I'm probably not going to go back on Sunday. I'm really tired. And I just, I'm out of money. So had a lot of fun. Saw a lot of authors. Got a lot of stuff signed. I will mention that I met Scott Siegler. I know Art and Tony both like his stuff. He's really cool. Chatted with him a little bit. Got some stuff signed by him. And he's a real cool guy. Let's see. There's just a lot of stuff going on there. Went to a little bit of the film festival. Most of the films there kind of weren't that great. I don't even really remember what any of them were called. I don't know who they were made by. Obviously, the production quality was kind of low on most of them. I mean, they're probably like film students or just people making their own films. But I mean, as far as writing and plot and pacing, they were pretty awful. I went to some of the horror films and some of the comic book type films. I guess I don't know. They had several. Lots of cool stuff there anyway. And it was a lot of fun. If any of y'all ever get a chance to go to a con or anything like that, one of your local cons, go ahead and go. Phoenix Comic Con is, and there's probably about 90,000 people that attend, the Comic Con. And, so it's not a small one, but it's not, you know, San Diego or Dragon Con or anything like that. But, it was a lot of fun. I really recommend going to a con. And if I think of anything else I want to talk about it, I'll call in later. All right, thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, and thank you, Tad. And, you know, I'm a fan of Mr. Siegler, and I actually have a new story that's going to tie in with Mr. Siegler. So we'll you guys will have to look forward to that later. So so now it's Art's turn. Art, what have you been watching?
Okay, so I don't know if I've said this on the show. I know I've told you about it, but Brittany started working a full-time job, and she is working second shift. So I have been spending a lot more time watching Aubrey on my own. And we've been doing a lot of things, getting out about, you know, going places, doing things. We've also been watching a lot more Netflix together. And so this is all stuff that I've been watching with Aubrey over the last few weeks. And it's almost none of it's new. She has been on a kick with the Powerpuff Girls, classic Powerpuff Girls. She saw, you know, the little thumbnail of the animation and she checked that out. And I liked Powerpuff Girls back in the day, you know, cause I'm firmly in the camp with, Eric Sommerer from the Dice Tower that it was just a good show. I just enjoyed watching it. And so we've watched, I don't know, probably over the last 2.5 weeks, like probably a couple dozen episodes of Powerpuff Girls. We have, with the Pokemon craze, have been digging through both Pokemon Indigo League, which is the first series, and Pokemon XY. And we've only just started Indigo League, so we're probably about maybe a half dozen episodes into that. She's been mostly watching XY without me. I've caught quite a few episodes, more than I've caught of Indigo League, and I can't really get into XY because it just feels like more of the same. I like watching the original to kind of seeing where it all got its start, but the newer episodes just don't interest me as much. Plus, it's all different Pokemon. You know, I watched not a lot, but enough back when it originally came out. And so I was familiar with the original 151. That's why Pokemon Go is totally right in my alley, and I'm playing that a ton. And we play that together all the time. So that has been interesting digging back into that. Some new stuff. There is a Home cartoon. You know, Home, the little purple alien with the guy from Big Bang animated movie. Mm-hmm. It got its own little spinoff cartoon. And it's actually pretty funny, pretty entertaining. It is not... The animation style is nothing at all like the movie. It is a cartoon, kind of cel-shaded, very kind of a simple art style. But the writing is decent. The comedy comes across well. It is funny and entertaining, and it does, I think, a good job of expanding the movie universe. We have been there. Puss in Boots season 3 has dropped, so we are now 3 seasons in on Puss in Boots, and that is still totally worth watching, totally entertaining, and a good job with expanding that that side of the story, that franchise. There is a new show that she just found, and we're literally like 4 episodes in, and it's called Dinosaur King. And Dinosaur King is a straight-up Pokemon ripoff that has dinosaurs instead of Pokemon. It's like Pokemon crossed with Yu-Gi-Oh! Time Traveler brings dinosaurs and integrates them into cards. And so you're collecting dinosaur cards to fight other people with dinosaurs. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. And she loves it. And it's driving me nuts. Let's see. And last but not least, we finally picked up Inside Out on DVD. The movie that I watched 3 times in the theater, I put off buying because I had really kind of worn thin on it. I don't know what got her on the kick of wanting to pick up Inside Out, but she really, really wanted it. We picked it up, and I think she's watched it, I want to say, like 2 dozen times over the last week. And I put it on and I walk out of the room because I can't do it anymore.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. It's terrible. It's terrible. I mean, it's a good movie, but it's like I don't need to watch it again and again. You know, I almost put it in the same category. We talked about, you know, like Schindler's List and Black Hawk Down. It's really heavy and it's really, you know, it's got a lot of stuff going on and, but I just don't need to see it anymore. And she's just eating it up. I think it's on right now. So.
Yeah, no, I remember when we started playing board games when we were in high school. I was at my, it might not have been high school, it might have been college. That the second Batman, I think in the time, I mean, because we ended up playing a 5-hour, it might have been Axis and Allies or something like that, but I ended up seeing the second Batman like 2.5 times.
Right.
And, you know, his, I guess his wife was watching it like on a loop.
Okay. Kind of thing. You know, I had some friends like that, and with them, it was Tombstone. Mm-hmm. And every time I went over there, Tombstone was on. They were constantly watching Tombstone. It was like, I don't think I've ever seen the movie from beginning to end, like in one sitting. I've seen the entire movie in bits and pieces. I've watched all of the front half. I've watched all of the back half. I've watched all of the middle. I've watched it in bits and pieces. I don't think I've ever watched it all the way through. It's a great movie. I don't have any problems with it. It's just that I've seen it so many times in bits and pieces that I don't see it anymore. But, yeah, it's funny when people get into that, let's watch the same thing. And Aubrey, I know a lot of kids, you know, parents talked about their kids being that way. They latch onto a movie and they just want to watch it over and over and over again. She's never really been that bad. It's like she might on a given day pick a movie, maybe watch it through twice, but tomorrow it's something else. You know, I mean, we have literally hundreds of DVDs, and so she's constantly picking something else to watch. But Inside Out has been a constant companion. Oh, I did think Inside Out has taken a break from time to time over the last couple of weeks because I just remembered something else we have been watching. I don't remember. I think it was late 90s or early 2000s. Fantastic Four animated series. I had heard bad things. And I found it at like a... have you heard of Five Below?
No.
Five Below is like a dollar store, but everything is $5 or less. It's Five Below. And so I found, you know, like this four disc set that had, I think it was like two seasons, because it's like, maybe it's like six episodes on each disc. So maybe it's only like 24, maybe it's one season. But anyway, it was super cheap. I had heard bad things, but I'm like, it's Fantastic Four. It's animated. I should check it out. I've actually really been enjoying it, and she's been enjoying it. So we'll put a disc on, and we'll run the whole thing. So I've actually watched the first three discs. We haven't put fourth disc in yet. But we have been getting a slight break from Inside Out with the Fantastic Four animated series.
Hmm.
So that is my share time.
All right. Well, you just helped me, because in honor of the Olympics, you know that thing you're probably not watching?
Yes.
I thought that I would go for a record for share time.
Okay.
And so I wrote down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 things that you watched. I have 8, but they're all movies. So you failed to mention it, Art. Did you not see Suicide Squad?
I did not see Suicide Squad.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe I'll. Do you think there's a chance you will be seeing it soon?
I don't think so. You should just go ahead and talk about it.
Okay. All right. So as I am wont to do, I went to see Suicide Squad the night before its release. So we went Thursday.
Did you go through the comic shop again?
We went through the comic shop again.
Okay.
They changed their thing. The movie actually started at 7:30.
Okay.
Which is half, you know, which is when I thought it was gonna start. The two podcasters that kind of warm up the crowd. One of them came in the full on Joker face paint, everything, purple vest or a nice purple jacket, green, you know, bright green pants. And they gave away a bunch of stuff, and they gave away tickets to the next screening, which will be Doctor Strange. So I'm excited about that. I enjoyed Suicide Squad, but I can understand every reviewer being pissed at this movie. Because I can totally tell the decisions that they basically hit the panic button on. I really enjoyed the first 45 minutes of this movie, the getting the band together part of the movie. But once they went on to the mission, so once, you know, I think in RPG terms, once everyone has their characters created, has all their equipment, and they're on the helicopter and they're going to start with the first encounter, everything just kind of unravels a little bit. And there's just so many tropes, and I still enjoyed the movie. And to me, the movie is pretty much carried by Will Smith and Margot Robbie. The Will Smith that I remember and that I love was back in this movie.
Nice.
But it was just some of the story choices. Like, I'm not going to reveal who the villain is, but not having a typical DC villain, you know, because I kind of wanted someone that I would have some recognition with. I had a feeling it wasn't going to be the Joker. Because we've seen the Joker in the trailer. The villain was not the Joker. I was disappointed about the amount of time that Jared Leto was in this movie. And
Too little.
I thought that his time, that he was going to have more time with Harley.
But it's not a Joker Harley movie. It's a Suicide Squad.
No, I understand that. Okay. I'm not saying that he needs a lion's share of screen time. I just thought that he was gonna be a bigger complication to what they were trying to do, because he's not in the movie for at least the bottom third or the last third, and he has absolutely zero to do with the final outcome of their mission. I felt like I was watching a Ghostbusters movie for a good chunk of this movie. And for people that can't stand movies where the characters don't make good decisions, or we don't know why they're motivated to act like they are going to be driven crazy by this movie.
Wait. Hold it right there. Criminals, by and large, don't make good decisions. That's why they're criminals. And supervillains, by and large, tend to be sociopaths.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a problem with either one of those two things, I mean, unless they're really, really stupid decisions as opposed to just not understandable, I don't know. I guess you kind of, you get what you get. But okay, continue. I'm sorry.
One thing that really bothered me is that Amanda Waller, the character played by Viola Davis, so there, the villain is, well, I pretty much tell you who the villain is. The villain, the Enchantress character decides that she wants to end humanity, and she totally has the power to do it. And so she starts doing this thing where she starts creating this big magical engine that's supposed to end the world in the middle of a midway city. And so they're tasked in stopping her, kind of thing. And so all those scenes where they show Amanda Waller in the trailer in the, you know, in the war room kind of thing, watching all the things go down.
Right.
She is actually in a building in Midway City.
Okay.
And they have to go get her because the mission's going to crap. I don't see how any government person of that much importance would be anywhere near that hot zone. They should be at some bunker in D.C. somewhere.
Right.
And so I don't know, the structure of what happens from A to B to C to the boss battle at the end with Enchantress and her, you know, and her lieutenant kind of thing. I don't know. It just didn't seem like it was a typical comic book kind of movie kind of thing. And you know, if you really look at the Suicide Squad, how much damage are they really going to do? Diablo is probably the most damaging of all of them,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. But Enchantress, for all intents and purposes, is a huge. She's like a demigod of magic. I mean, there's a part in the movie where she teleports halfway across the world and comes back in a couple, you know, in like 10 seconds. How are you going to defeat her?
Right.
I mean, because in, you know, if something happens to Diablo, you basically have a guy who throws boomerangs.
Yeah.
you have Deadshot who has a gun.
Uh-huh.
Even though it's an automatic weapon kind of thing. Harley Quinn has a baseball bat. But it's just a typical thing where you have this super powerful villain that somehow loses because she decides to go, you know, hand-to-hand with these. And she, you know, in... It's almost impossible to find, you know, just if you factor everything else out, just someone who can teleport. That's why I love First Class. It was impossible to kill that Redskin guy that teleported all over the place. I mean, you can't shoot him, you can't hit him, because as soon as he sees you even make a move towards him, he's going to teleport away. Kind of.
Right.
So there's easily 15 things you could find wrong with this movie. But I still enjoyed it. You know, it's almost like, you know, The Mummy, where, you know, it's kind of hard to follow with all this, the details of how you're supposed to win and that kind of stuff. But I didn't care. I kind of felt a little exhausted because the pacing of the movie, it seemed like I would have been fine with the actual mission and the action, but it seemed like it took them way too long to get there going. And it's also another trope where... We have minutes before the world ends.
Right.
You don't have time to have a little team building exercise or to stop and everyone gets a shot at the bar or something like that.
Right.
So I don't know about DC. At this point, I mean, I Wonder Woman looks good, but you know, obviously at a point DC needs to stop everything and just make Wonder Woman, because I think Batman versus Superman probably hurt this movie, that they made a bunch of rash decisions because everyone panicked that Batman versus Superman didn't make $1 zillion. I don't know what to think. I mean, I'll definitely go see Wonder Woman. But you know, Warner Brothers is between a rock and a hard place right now. Because it's like they're chasing the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I honestly think Zack Snyder is part of the problem because he was executive producer on this one. And if they didn't have to connect to Justice League, it might have been a better movie. I don't know. Because there are some connections to Justice League in this one. And because of Marvel's been successful with their formula about turning movies basically into TV episodes, because nowadays, you know, superhero movies, you have the expectation of, you know, we're going to see what's going to happen the next episode after the credits. We're supposed to lead into that kind of thing. I don't know. I don't know. I think about what the opportunity, they squandered a huge opportunity with Suicide Squad. Because I honestly, my expectation was it was going to be a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. I don't know. I think that's a bit strong. I think they are still finding their feet. I think they still have a lot of potential. I think they're moving in the right direction. I think they're still having missteps, but I think overall, I still think they have enough time to right that ship.
I mean, because this is the third disappointing movie.
Disappointing in what sense? Disappointing to you personally?
No. I mean, this is Hollywood. You got to look at numbers.
Okay. $133 million opening weekend and a $175 million budget. They're going to make their money.
Yeah.
And for a...
Well, not what they're expecting.
Okay. Well, it's not going to be a blockbuster hit, but it's going to make its budget. And
they want something in the neighborhood of $800 million to $1 billion. Because that's what's Marvel's making.
But that's not what Marvel made on Ant-Man. Because that's the tier I'm putting this in. This isn't Batman. This isn't Superman. This isn't Wonder Woman. This is Suicide Squad.
Yeah, but
so they may want $800 to $1 billion, but they have to put it in the league of the same type, the same movies, characters that are in the same league with each other.
I'm mainly going back to Superman versus Batman.
Okay.
Because Avengers did $1 billion.
Right.
And that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Marvel has, even if Ant-Man was considered a box office disappointment, I mean, they have a lot, you know, they have a lot of box office success that they can kind of shrug that off on. Warner Brothers doesn't have that.
Right.
They did not go through all this to make $400 million because they're building, they want to build a foundation so that their next 3, 4, 5 movies are all in the $800 million to $1 billion range.
I can definitely see heading that direction. I think Justice League can have that potential, but I think expecting that out of the Suicide Squad is ridiculous.
No, I understand that point. I understand that point, but I'm looking at more as the series of movies, not necessarily just Suicide Squad.
Right.
Because this weekend's going to be very crucial into saying it's going to behave exactly like Batman versus Superman and Man of Steel, because word of mouth got out and it dropped like a rock.
Right. And they chose a completely different direction to go with Man of Steel. They definitely made some mistakes with the version that they released for Batman versus Superman, because everybody I know who's seen the extended R-rated version says it's leagues above what was released. I think I know one person who was just kind of meh on the extended unrated cut or extended rated R cut. Everybody else, and I know at least a dozen people who've seen it and said this is the movie that should have been released.
Yeah, I mean, Leto has been very vocal about that they shot a lot more than what was in the movie.
But that and happens so, on every movie. I mean,
no, but he's the Joker,
right?
Kind of thing. And so we might not never know exactly how much he was supposed to be in it.
Right.
Supposedly they had two finished versions of the film that they showed the focus groups. Because, you know, they were, you know, when you look at this director, I mean, his forte or what he likes to shoot is gritty, male driven, you know, police dramas kind of thing. You know, like End of Watch was one of them.
Right.
Kind of thing. And I was just reading something earlier tonight about Hollywood Reporter saying that maybe he wasn't the best director, you know, because you kind of, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy was irreverent kind of thing. And, it it was fun. And to me, all Suicide Squad had to do was be, you know, fun. or, you know, fun-ish kind of thing. But I, you know, I honestly think that they, you know, the studio panicked with Batman vs. Superman, not to beat a dead horse. And, you know, one other thing I'm going to mention is that there's another movie that they said they did extensive reshoots because people said it was too dark. And that's Rogue One.
Right.
So I'm going to be very interested to see what happened with Rogue One. And maybe it made the film better. I knew, you know, I heard there were reshoots for Episode 7 that we, you know, that no one was really talking about. But anyways, it's definitely worth seeing. Margot Robbie's fantastic. Because I saw, you know, I watched a lot of YouTube stuff on this movie. So a lot of the jokes I think I've seen already, but there are some good bits in this movie. I mean, overall, you know, I enjoyed it. You know, this, it's still better than any Twilight movie, even though I haven't seen any Twilight movie. But that's my choice. I've
seen almost all the Twilight movies.
That's not a shot directed at you, but I'll just count that as a bonus.
It's not. It is what it is. It's part of marriage, for better or for worse. That was a for worse moment, but, you know, I'm here.
Okay. All right. So I better... We'll need to talk when you finally watch it.
Yeah.
And that's one. I got seven more to talk about. All right. Okay. So
but that's the big one.
That's the big one. Okay. So I have a ton of Gap movies, and Gap movies are movies I probably should have seen that are classics.
Mm-hmm.
So I sat down and watched The Professional.
Oh, that is a good movie.
Yes, and it's one, there is kind of a mini theme in some of these movies, is that it's not a recently dead guy movie, but it is a movie where I was a little sad that he's not with us anymore, and that's Danny Aiello.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, I mean, early Gary Oldman.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Jean Reno. I've liked him in every movie he's been in. It was a little squeamish with a young Natalie Portman. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's a movie that holds up pretty well. Enjoyed the ending. Had a kind of a Western kind of ending.
Yeah, I agree.
So I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. All right.
I was going to say that there's often been talks of doing a Professional 2 with Natalie Portman all grown up.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to see that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely watched that. Okay, the next one, and these are in no particular order. I finally got around to watching Captain Phillips. I was very intrigued by this movie, the tension. They drew me in on that whole story. Did you ever see Captain Phillips?
I saw some of it. It didn't grab me.
Yeah. It's a story of a cargo ship captain that gets hijacked by Somali pirates. Mm-hmm. And it's still amazing that we still have pirates to this day.
Yeah.
But the individual story
with Aubrey,
story about how, they end up on the lifeboat, and that whole, I mean, it's just an amazing story. And there are a couple points where you realize that probably didn't happen, that they need to make it more of a movie type of thing.
Yeah.
But it is an incredible story, and it is a great performance by both Tom Hanks and by the unknown actors who play the pirates. So I really enjoyed it. You know, I had an elevated blood pressure for most of the movie, so I definitely enjoyed it. And probably the most, you know, reality based thing that I've watched in a long time. Okay, speaking of not reality, next movie is Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is, you get to watch Tom Cruise die multiple times. which you don't get to see in a lot of movies, but it's kind of like a sci-fi / military / Groundhog Day. So there's a big invasion, and for some reason Tom Cruise gets to keep reliving the same day, and you got to figure out A, how to stop reliving the same day, and B, how is he going to save the world, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed it. I enjoyed some of the CG with the exo suits or the exo armor kind of thing. It was also nice that Emily Blunt was kind of the badass in the movie, not Tom Cruise. So that was a nice change. I mean, it was a decent film. I mean, don't fall over yourself trying to go see it, but I enjoyed it. I enjoy Tom Cruise when he's not the alpha male type of guy, kind of thing. And this character, he's kind of like a media liaison military officer kind of thing. So that was kind of refreshing. And, you know, seeing all the different ways that he gets splattered on the wall was pretty awesome. I mean, you know, because I'm not the hugest Tom Cruise fan, but I was trying to think how many movies did Tom Cruise actually die, and I haven't seen a lot of Tom Cruise, but it was a fun summer movie. Next summer movie or comedy is speaking of Sausage Party, I got around to seeing Neighbors. I enjoyed it. The vulgar humor was definitely vulgar. It's kind of predictable. But they do a good job of putting some story and some heart into the bad guys, which is the fraternity kind of thing. And Dave Franco did a really good job, I thought, in this movie. Zac Efron was Zac Efron kind of thing. And Rose Byrne really showed her range a little bit being in a comedy like this, because before I've just seen her in the X-Men movies, kind of thing. But she has to be the wife to Seth Rogen, which is an unenviable job. But I enjoyed this movie somewhat. I mean, some of it was kind of, the jokes were kind of mailed in, but I enjoyed it. Okay, now we're gonna get a little serious. Yeah, the next movie is Darjeeling Limited. And the reason I have this recorded is because I feel like that I've enjoyed the previous Wes Anderson movies. And so I feel like I'm going to watch all of them. So I have the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou recorded. So I'll be watching that soon. But Darjeeling Limited is basically about a train ride through India between three brothers that are trying to reconnect after the death of their father. And the three brothers are Owen Wilson, Jason Schwartzman, and Adrian Brody. And this movie is almost like a Seinfeld episode because there's not a whole lot going on. But that's kind of the point of being on a train, that you kind of meander. And there is an event that kind of brings the brothers together. But they're all so quirky. I don't know how they didn't have a three-way knife fight on the train. Probably not one of the better Wes Andersons or the more funny ones, but it was definitely a good. I mean, because there's a point in the movie where things kind of get more real, and that's when the real drama started. So if you're a Wes Anderson fan or super fan, this is one you probably have seen already, or you probably need to watch. But you know, it's kind of, you kind of need to, this shouldn't be your first Wes Anderson. Let me put it that way. Cause you kind of need to appreciate his camera style. He likes to do a lot of lateral movement with the camera. So it kind of has that almost like a theater, like a stage theater type of feel to his movies. So that was Darjeeling Limited. Okay. So two more, next one was Enough Said, because this was a recently deceased actor, James Gandolfini as the romantic lead in a romantic comedy between him and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And I've been binge watching The New Adventures of Old Christine, and she plays a completely different person. She's almost normal in this movie, but the setup is that she's a masseuse who's divorced, isn't really dating. She meets James Gandolfini and, in a separate incident, meets the ex-wife, even though she doesn't know that they're divorced. But she picks up a new client, played by Catherine Keener, as the ex-wife, and they become fast friends. And it seems like every massage, she's complaining about all these terrible, well, not really terrible, but all these quirks that her ex-husband had. And she ends up going out with James Gandolfini, and she finally puts it together, and then all these little quirks kind of bubble to the top because she keeps talking about him. And it's another one of those movies where if she just would have came out, say, look, I'm dating your ex-husband, I don't think I can be your masseuse anymore, movie's over. But no, they create a lot of this drama, and it's also about the anxieties of a parent when you have a kid that's going to be going to college, which I'll be dealing with that in about 2 to 3 years. So it was a nice, sweet movie, a little bittersweet because, you know, Mr. Gandolfini isn't with us anymore. And it was a little creepy or sad because there's actually a storyline in the movie where they talk about his weight, you know, he struggles with weight kind of thing, which ultimately led to his massive heart attack when he died. But anyways, I enjoyed it, and I enjoy everything that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is in. Okay, last one. Another recently deceased actor movie, God's Pocket. Now, I heard about this independent movie that was directed by John Slattery, who, if you remember, played Howard Stark in the second Iron Man. Do you remember that art? Oh, okay, I'll keep going. Well, anyways, this movie is God's Pocket refers to, that's a nickname for Pennsylvania, and it's basically about this small town that they have a tragedy that the son gets killed at his workplace, and it's just all the events that come from that. So Philip Seymour Hoffman, Christina Hendricks, John Turturro, always loved John Turturro. This movie, it's a very depressing movie. No one is really a great person in this one, but there's a couple of comic twists in the middle of this movie that just hit you like a bag of bricks. So it's kind of depressing in the beginning. It's funny towards the middle. And then there's a couple things that happen that just, I was bummed out for hours after watching this one. And I don't really like the ending. I don't know if I can really recommend this one. There's just a lot of weird story things that happen, but yeah, it's, but I feel like I had to watch it because one of, you know, Mr. Hoffman's last movies. So, all right. So those are my 8 movies for share time. So Art?
Yep.
Okay. Cause I asked you a question and you didn't answer. I didn't know if you were still there.
Sorry.
No, that's right. Okay. So here's where we're going to end share time. And I kind of whipped through all those movies. And now let's go over to news. So Art?
Okay, so first thing on the news. This one is, it's breaking my heart. Star Wars The Force Awakens is going to drop new deleted scenes. Find out when and where. So they are talking about a new release for this coming holiday season. And they are just going to put in a ton of new extras, deleted scenes, and I am just like, I feel so betrayed. I picked up The Force Awakens, and now it's not complete. And I don't think I'll be buying any more Star Wars movies until like a year after to make sure I get all the extra deleted scenes, all the, you know, whatever else they're going to put in. If they're going to be re-releasing just, you know, a year later, it's terrible. It's the worst. I don't know what to blame, Disney or the Star Wars in general, but I'm very upset at this.
Blame Hollywood because they did the same thing for Lord of the Rings, right?
Yeah, there you go.
So, just like io9.com said, welcome to Star Wars. it's not going away. Yeah, having a feature-length commentary from J.J. Abrams almost wants me to buy it, but, you know, I'm with you. Let's just, you know, just say no.
Yep. I mean, you know what? If they, because, you know, we live in this age where you're picking up the DVD, Blu-ray, digital, you know. Maybe if my digital copy, I can go re-download it and get additional content. That would make me a little more forgiving of this and be like, oh, okay, well, That would be something. But no, I will get nothing, and I will be disappointed and upset.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's one of those things where I find myself stopping buying Blu-rays if they're on sale, just because I know I'll probably never watch it. And with streaming nowadays, I don't know. I've just been kind of, I mean, kind of pumping the brakes.
Oh, see, I'll pick up because Aubrey is hard on DVDs.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing. You know, when it comes to the kids, you know, my daughter, she's watching Grey's Anatomy on Netflix right now. And my son loves YouTube. That's all he wants.
Right. So. But like typically a new DVD is $20. You know, we're at Target. And then it's like, it's 25 for the Blu-ray, the digital, and the DVD. So it's like, I it makes it easy for me to download it onto the computer. And then I've got two discs, one that holds up to scratches a little better. And, you know, and so I often go, I'm like, I throw in $5 and I've got effectively three different copies, three different ways of watching it, you know. So I really appreciate that, but this is not that, and this is very upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I am very news light.
Okay.
Since I was anticipating a very long share time. But I do have one news story that I wrote down on a piece of paper. Tad was talking about Scott Sigler.
Yes.
And I saw on Facebook, I don't remember if it was Facebook or Google Plus, that The Rookie is going to have a new release for an audiobook.
Oh, okay.
You've heard me talk about graphic audio.
Right.
Apparently,
right.
The graphic audio people are going to be doing The Rookie. So you're going to have a full voice cast.
Wow.
Now, I was reading some of the comments. I don't know how much improvement we're going to get over Sigler's performance.
Yeah,
because he's really good.
That's rough.
He's really good. And, you know, it's almost a study of when the author performs the material.
Yes.
Or reads the material, as opposed to professionals that are just kind of bred to crank this out so we can get it out to market.
I don't know about that. I mean, there are people who they are quality readers, and they are good actors, and they're really putting their all into it. I don't think they're just trying to crank it out. But I think the problem is the connection to the characters.
Yeah.
You know, he has an intimate connection to the characters that's just not going to compare. Nobody else is going to compare it with the way he did it. The Cher series by Nathan Lowell. I'm actually currently re-listening to that. That one and the two ancillary stories, South Coast Tales and Ravenwood. But anyway, neither here nor there. But he read those himself, and I just heard. I think I saw it on Facebook, or maybe I heard an interview with him. I don't remember which. But anyway, they're getting professionally done, you know, to be released, the Cher series. And it's like, I don't know that I have any interest in that. I mean, I'll probably give the first one a try, but I like listening to the author reading his own work.
Yeah.
You know, it is a fantastic story. I love it. I listen to it in its entirety like twice a year, and it literally takes me a week to work through all of the stories. And I still, it's like 2 weeks out of the year where I'm going through the entirety of this entire series. And so, yeah, I don't even know what to think about that. I mean, I think it'll be worth checking out. I love The Rookie. I love, just that entire series. It's five books now. The Rookie, MVP, All Pro.
The Veteran was, I think, the second one.
The veteran. That doesn't sound right. But I think there's five. But neither here nor there. That's another one I need to listen to again. But yeah. Anyway. But that's interesting.
Do you have the print copy of The Rookie?
I do not. I don't read books anymore.
Yeah, I actually I got number 90.
When Aubrey gets a little older. Nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah. All right, so what do you got next?
Okay. I thought this was interesting. There is an Amy Adams sci-fi drama called Arrival. which deals with a making first contact with an alien race. And she basically plays a linguist who is helping to communicate with these aliens. So it's kind of a sci-fi drama, eerie, suspenseful. But there's a trailer for it. Amy Adams, I like it. And then, you know, sci-fi, not normally a genre she's involved in, but I thought it sounded interesting, and so I need to go. I just saw the story, and I want to check out the trailer and see what I can see.
All right. Just a quick update. I was completely wrong. It is The Rookie, The Starter, The All-Pro, The MVP, and The Champion.
The Champion.
Even though Goodreads.com has Title Fight GFL number 1.5, and then there's in between the All Pro and the MVP, there's the Detective and the Reporter. Mm-hmm. There's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 3, 8 books.
Right. I wasn't counting the three side stories though.
Yeah.
The
side stories. So Title Fight was co-written by Matt Wallace and Mr. Sigler. And then the Detective was also by Sigler and Wallace, and then the Reporter was by Sigler and Mer Lafferty.
Yeah.
So
Mer Lafferty is another good writer.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So my last thing is I was looking at Rotten Tomatoes, and I think we were talking earlier about that this weekend it seemed like everything is in the high 80s and 90s. So, like, Sausage Party, 87%, Pete's Dragon, 88%, some lesser-known movies, Florence Foster Jenkins at 91%, Hell or High Waters at 100%, 27 reviews.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. And
then Bloodfather, 92%. Yeah, Hell or High Water, Chris Pine, oh, my God, I just blanked on his name, and Jeff Bridges. It's basically like it's a cowboy heist kind of movie.
Okay.
Kind of, it looks really good. Ben Foster is the one I can't think of. Okay. But if you go to the weekend before that, Suicide Squad, 26%. Jason Bourne, 57%. Nine Lives, 6%. Right? So there's a discussion on Reddit Movies or r/movies. What's the best movie with a Rotten Tomato score under 50%? So I know I'm kind of blindsiding you this, Art, but you think about it, and I want you to answer next week what your favorite movie under 50% is.
Okay.
And I'm just going to name drop some of these that's in the discussion. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas is 49%. Armageddon is 39%. Hot Rod, never heard of, 40%.
You've never heard of Hot Rod?
No.
Oh my goodness, that's Andy Samberg as like a daredevil trying to win the love of a girl. It's a total like not daredevil like a stunt guy, like Evel Knievel type guy.
Okay, right.
Trying to get, you know, this girl's love and affection, trying to be just cool. And Brittany loves that movie. Absolutely loves that movie.
The Kids in the Hall movie, Brain Candy, 38%. Secret Life of Walter Mitty is right at 50%. Last Action Hero, 37%. Speed Racer, 39%. Hook, 30%. Gummo, 33%. Grandma's Boy, 16%. But a lot of people are saying that Wet Hot American Summer, 32%.
I think Hook is a fantastic movie. That's a shame that's on there. Did you see the image of the Lost Boys?
Yeah, I did.
Present day, that Rufio.
All right, so I'm going to pre-guess at your answer.
Okay.
38% Equilibrium.
That, you know what? A lot of these, there's a lot of 90s action movies that they're just popcorn movies. So it doesn't surprise me that they don't get good critical review. But they're good movies because they did what they set out to do.
Bloodsport, 33%.
I think we have a winner.
Roadhouse at 40%.
I take that back. I was thinking Blood of Heroes. Never mind. Bloodsport. I got to go look up Blood of Heroes. Anyway.
Rush Hour 3, 13%. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, 40%.
Which one? The original live action?
The very first live action one.
I Okay.
See, I think Tommy Boy, 44%.
Tommy Boy is an absolute classic.
Yeah.
Come on.
All right, so I could go on forever because it just keeps going on and on and on. So yeah, and that's my last thing. So Art, what do you got left?
Okay, I'm gonna do some more searching, but I'm gonna say right now, Bloody Heroes, 13%, Rucker Hauer. It's gotta be one of my favorites, and that is a low ass rating. That is a good movie. That is a really good movie, but I could be biased because it's Rucker Hauer.
Yes. Well, yeah. Who knows? All right. Is that it?
Yeah, let's wrap it up. I have one more story, but it's 6 pages long. So I will save that for next week. And
all right, so what 6 page long news story are we going to hear about next week?
Somebody is batshit crazy. 6 ways DC is actually doing a better job than Marvel.
All right, yeah, I don't think I could take that at this juncture.
No. Okay. No. I'm going to lead with that next week.
All right. So this has been another marathon episode of Backseat Box Office. Thank you for listening. If you want to check out more back episodes of us or the other podcast, actually the flagship, backseatproducers.com, just go to our website, backseatproducers.com. And I've been listening to a lot of Dice Tower, so I should mention, just like they lead off their every show, hosting for the show has been provided by Mr. Tony Mass, so thank you, Tony. And other than that, thank you for listening, and we will catch you next time. Art, say goodbye.
Goodbye.